This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's the first Friday of the month, January 6th, 2006. And on the first Friday of the month, we talk about dogs here on the Afternoon Magazine. And our guests this afternoon are Jim Keel and his wife, Robin Haggard. And they have been with us before on the program. Carol Lindholm can't be with us this afternoon. So as you might have heard Robin say there at the outset, Jim didn't want to be alone. He wanted to have a sidekick. So here we are with Robin and Jim. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. And we're here this afternoon to take your questions about dog care, behavior, and training. Here are the phone numbers, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL. We also have in the studio with us a very special guest this afternoon, four-legged puppy, little puppy. Of course, it's going to be four-legged, right? But normally. And her name is Candy, and she, perfect name for her. She's a sweetheart. How old is she?
11 weeks.
11 weeks.
Yeah.
She's a big girl already.
Yeah, she'll be 75, 80 pounds when she gets done.
How much does she weigh at the moment?
I haven't weighed her lately. I'm guessing about 25.
Yeah.
She's an armful when you pick her up.
She's so pretty. And she seems very inquisitive, and I would say she looks like a really intelligent dog. What do you think, Papa?
Yeah, you don't always want an intelligent dog. And she's very clever. Let's put it that way. I found her this morning in a room that we have barricaded off so the dogs can't get in it. And for the life of me, I can't figure out how she got in. The barricades were up. She couldn't climb over them because they'd fall over. So somehow she got in and closed the door behind her. That's all I can
think. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. You know, we've already got a listener waiting to talk with us. So put on your headsets, and we'll talk with the listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Afternoon. With the new year comes the exciting news that tonight begins the new season of The Dog Whisperer. Are you guys thrilled and looking forward to it?
Do you know The Dog Whisperer is on National Geographic Television, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Where we live, we don't have cable.
So we don't. Well, tell us about The Dog Whisperer.
I didn't want to prejudice anyone. I was basically calling to find out if there were any television programs that the guests do find interesting for dog owners.
Having the ability to get cable. We don't watch Animal Planet on a regular basis, but I do know they have coverage of agility and agility trials and dog shows on Animal Planet from time to time, and I think those are fun to watch and good to get people interested in those dog sports.
Broadcast has been covering, NBC I think is covering some of the larger dog shows. National Geographic occasionally on this very network, WILL.
PBS.
PBS. Mm-hmm. Not NPR, but PBS. We'll have specials on dogs. But we're Buffy fans, and there's not a lot of dog stuff.
To the listener, have you seen The Dog Whisperer?
Yeah, I ran across it a couple of years ago, and it's so tightly scripted, everything gets done and fixed in half an hour. And it's
just like life.
Misbehaving dogs, dogs that have compulsive behavior, dogs that will bark at some object or something or some person but not others, dogs who apparently have overwhelmed and taken over their household.
Yeah.
A number of bad behaviors, and it's all done in half an hour. And obviously they don't show any of the failures, and so like much of television, you have to see it with a jaundiced eye. But the trainer seems to know what he's doing, and the question I've always had and the reason I called is, can this sort of thing actually be taught to people, or has he got a talent, a knack, a skill?
He sees
dog misbehaving even before the dog starts it. That's the trick, I think. And I don't know if ordinary people can be that sensitive and observant.
I think I saw an episode of The Dog Whisperer at the National. We were in a hotel for a week for a very long dog show. And I think I saw an episode. It's scripted, and the training time is condensed because they only have a half hour on the show. And that's what we try to do, especially in puppy training, which Robin is the specialist in, is to try to warn people about certain kinds of behaviors that can crop up if you're not careful. And very often, but not always. Whoa, my chair just just went down a foot. I didn't do anything, honest. Many behaviors are inadvertently caused by the owners, but some aren't. Some are psychological problems that the dog just has.
Well, and certain people have dominance over dogs just naturally, and the dog recognizes that. And while they may have gotten away with a lot of stuff with their owners, because their owners, you know, let them do things when they're cute puppies, and then they don't let them know that those are wrong, the dog continues to do those not-so-cute things later. And a new person coming in, the dog doesn't know what to expect, so they automatically tend to watch this new person and see what they're doing to make sure to see what kind of person they are. Are they going to be dominant to them? Are they going to be strict with them? So the dog is cautious of new people, and so automatically kind of tends to look up to them. So that is one reason why a new person coming in can often look like a real star, even though they may not have special talent. They're just the new person coming in.
And I've often thought that it's so much like children. There are kids who swear that their parents have eyes in the back of their head because they seem to know bad behavior is coming even
right
before it starts.
Yep.
And there are some kids who behave one way at home and another way at school.
Yeah.
So that when the teacher says, "You have such a model child," the parents don't know who they're talking about.
They're shocked. The other thing is probably...
I wonder why folks always said that about me. I never figured that out.
Probably on this show, I'm guessing that they set up the situation, too. They go in knowing what behaviors the dog does that are wrong. So they'll set up a situation where they know the dog is going to react a certain way so that they can anticipate that behavior. Because that's one of the training techniques that most of us use, is to set up a behavior and then you can correct it just as the dog is even thinking about it, which
is... Well, I guess then if you know it's entertainment and, in quote, a reality TV show, you can view it that way and not expect to get dog training tips from it.
Well, they tend to... deal with dogs that have extreme kinds of problems, at least the one episode I saw, whereas the typical obedience training that we are mostly involved in involves ordinary dogs, you know, dogs that don't have any extreme kinds of problems, but that it potentially could develop them. And so we use kind of ordinary techniques. When you get dogs that have separation anxiety, for example, and they're tearing the house apart, simple behavior, obedience things won't work for an anxious dog. In other words, you can teach him to sit, and the dog will learn how to sit. But once you leave the room, the dog will start tearing things apart. So you're right. There's more drama in taking a dog that's afraid to be left alone and making him not afraid to be left alone than there is to take an ordinary dog and teach him how to sit.
Mm-hmm. Dog training is
not good television, you know.
Right.
You need something dramatic and quick.
Watching paint dry.
Yeah, and
paint job, but you're still watching paint dry.
That's one thing we warn people starting out in obedience is, you know, the dog isn't going to sit the first time you tell him to sit, and he's probably not going to sit the 20th time you tell him to sit. So you got to be patient, keep at it. Some dogs learn faster than others, and it does have the quality of watching grass grow. You know, and then comes the day you say sit, the dog actually sits, and it's a joy.
Well, thanks for your time.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. I imagine that on a program like that, though, you could pick up some information that would be useful about behavior and about why a problem crops up.
Yeah, I'm happy there is a channel called Animal Planet, and they do focus on it because so many people get their information through television. I know. I spend, 12 hours a day watching television, even at work. It's good to have that kind of thing.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on the toll-free line, a listener in Belgium. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a bit of a problem. I've had labs for many, many years, and these two pups I have, there's a male and a female, and they look exactly the same, except for their sexes. And the problem I have with them is when they were pups, I provided in the whelping pen straw for them to lay in. Well, they developed a habit of urinating in the straw. Well, that's fine. Made it easy to shovel it out and take care of. And as they grew older, now I have them in, they're outdoor dogs. I have them outdoor on a run and I have a little house and everything. But I put straw in the house now. And guess what? That's what they do in the house.
Hmm. How old are they?
Right now they're about a year and a half. Hmm. And so I have found that I can't use straw in there because obviously they make a real mess. Why they continue to lay in it, I do not understand, but they continue to do it. And I can't seem to break them. Now, I've thought about maybe getting cedar chips or something like that, because I'm sure it's just a situation where they have accustomed themselves to that situation, and they're just going to continue that way. You got to think more like a dog than a human in this situation. And I was wondering what you might think about that, how I could get around it. Cedar chips are rather expensive.
Actually, I would probably use the sawdust.
I can get that too.
That comes in the big bales, and it's about $5 for a huge bale of it.
Well, for me, it's much cheaper since I'm a cabinet maker. I got all the sawdust I want.
Okay, you don't want the real fine stuff.
You want chips, right?
You want more, the bigger pieces.
The plainer chips, not the sawdust.
Yeah. The pine bedding that we buy, we use for the puppies. In their run, and they get used to going in that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, since your dogs have gotten used to the straw, you could reverse the process and
use the other direction.
Yeah, and use the pine bedding or your own sawdust as their bedding.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing, I have a lot of hardwoods, and they tend to dust up more than the pine does.
Yeah.
Maybe I could find something that would work properly.
You can also use shredded newspaper.
Oh, well, there's a thought, but how would I... Well, I
it gets wet it and wet, soggy,
yeah.
though.
It,
yeah. Yeah, whereas the sawdust absorbs the moisture.
Mm-hmm. You could use a combination.
Well, if I would have been smart, I would have started with the wood chips when they were pups and gone to the straw now.
Yeah.
Because straw is much, much handier.
It's a little bit unusual, though, for a dog to soil where it sleeps.
Yeah, it is. That's what I thought, too, because I've never had it before.
Don't blame yourself too much. Our pups are on straw in the winter in their house, but they don't seem to go. Go elsewhere and not.
What I've had them do is when I've let dogs out and so several runs are open, I've had one dog run in, another dog's run and pee in their bed.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't do that.
Now, they'll do number two, shall we say, outside.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the urination they do inside. And since it's really cold, you know, I mean, sometimes
it freezes.
I hate to do that to them, you know.
What you might also do is just check them for urinary tract infections.
Mm,
it may be, because it's really unusual, and if they're in the doghouse, you know, to pee, if they're peeing while they're lying down, that kind of indicates a some sort of a low-grade infection.
Hmm. Well, I don't know whether
Robin shakes her head no, but I always, if a dog is peeing in an unusual way, I think the first thing you do is check them.
I don't know if they're laying down when they do this or standing up.
My thinking is if they're standing up inside the doghouse, that's kind of uncomfortable for them.
They could be marking to say this is my bed, this is my territory.
It's more than that. It's definitely a lot.
It's
a lot. It's more than just marking.
It's probably the girl.
I think you're right. I think you have, because the male, when I let him out, man, he goes every place.
Mm-hmm.
Runs around to his areas and takes care of that. But the female doesn't do that.
Is she spayed?
Right.
Is she spayed?
No, but that's coming up soon.
So
I don't know if that would change.
Yeah, well, a lot of females lose a little bit of continence after they're spayed.
Oh, well, that would cause a problem in the other direction.
Robin's disagreeing with me.
Well,
this is why I like Carol so much better, because she agrees with everything I say.
She does not.
I would just say that not a lot of females, when typically it's an older female, too, that will develop a leak as they age.
Mm.
So the young dogs, when they're spayed, typically don't have a problem, but sometimes in their old age. And it's not real common. Over the years, we've had lots of spayed females, and we've only had a couple who've had that leak problem.
Well, that's what I mean. This is an uncommon situation. Yeah.
Well, I've been doing it for a long time with pups and had them for a long time, and this is the first set I've ever had this problem with. But they seem to have enforced each other, I guess.
Thank you very much. I would take her in and just, you know, have a check.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. And we're hearing Candy here this afternoon in the background.
Candy.
What is she telling us, do you suppose?
She's not happy that I'm holding her. She wants to...
She can get down, can't she?
Well, she was trying to tear up the paper in the wastebasket.
Well,
there.
I've got one more chew thing for her, so I'll give her another chew toy. This is a greenie that I'm opening up, and there's a lot of controversy right now with greenies because several dogs have had... A lot of dogs have had operations after having greenies because the greenies are in chunks in their digestive system and they don't pass them. So a friend of ours who's a vet has had to remove several pieces of greenie from dogs. And so I brought the greenie along kind of as a something to talk about, too, is even though they're advertised as a very safe chew toy, you always have to be cognizant of what your dog is chewing on and eating and making sure that they don't get blocked up.
Now, the two of you have a lot of experience with dogs. What are your favorite chew toys? What are the safest ones out there?
I think the absolute safest bone-type chew toy is the femur bones, like we get at the Meat Science Lab. And I hate to tell that to the public.
I was going to say, you're giving away our secret.
That means they'll flock over there and get them before we do. But a femur bone raw is probably the safest thing. And then once they get the marrow out, you can stuff it with peanut butter or
cheese,
easy cheese, anything like that, and the dogs will lick it.
Now, what about the things that are made of an artificial material that you put peanut butter or some kind of treat material
like the Kong toys and things like that are fine.
Okay.
Our dogs are totally uninterested in Kongs, and even when I've stuffed them with stuff, our guys don't seem to get that interested in the Kong toys. But I know some other people, their dogs go nuts over them. So it really depends on your dog.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking this afternoon about dogs with Robin Haggard and Jim Keel. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they also raise Malamutes. And Candy is a Malamute puppy, beautiful girl, and she's happily chewing on her greenie at the moment. So if you hear If you hear some panting, it's not us. It's Candy.
It's usually
She's having a good time.
Not this week.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, listeners, you can join us this afternoon if you've got a question about dog care, behavior, and training. Give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL.
I wanted to mention Carol has gotten a new dog, and she adopted it from the Humane Society, and it is a, she called it a Goldie Poo, or a Goldie Doodle, but it's, I think the proper term is Goldie Poo and Labradoodle. There, it's become a popular mix now of Labrador Retriever bred to a poodle or Golden Retriever bred to a poodle to create the perfect house pet, one that doesn't shed, one that's hypoallergenic, and also has the temperament of the lab or the golden retriever. Unfortunately, yes, hers ended up at the Humane Society because the child was still allergic to it and it still sheds. So even though it's a combination of those two breeds, you can... they aren't necessarily always hypoallergenic or always non-shedding, so depends on what characteristics they picked up from which side of the family. But Carol's very enamored with her new puppy, and so's Robbie. So
that's good.
It's a happy mix.
That's good. So that's a possibility, though, that a dog, that particular mix could give you a dog that would not shed?
Would be like the poodle in that the hair just continues to grow.
It's more like hair.
Right, and you have to clip it.
Okay, so then there's kind of maybe a little trade-off there. You have to have the dog
groom.
You have to do it or take it to a groomer.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is that soft, cottony kind of fur, so if it's an outdoor dog very much, it picks up a lot of brambles and grass and leaves and stuff. So it's a little bit more management than
she's chewing on the chair. Isn't that cute?
Oh. Yes, she does have teeth.
And I would imagine that these mixes would be pretty intelligent dogs. How does that work out in terms of what their intelligence is and what they're interested in doing, you know, for a living, so to speak?
I've had only a little bit of experience with a Goldie Poo, and she was in my puppy class a couple of sessions ago, and she seemed like a very sweet dog, but a little high energy, and just one of those dogs that caught on very quickly but didn't have a very lengthy attention span, but that's not abnormal for puppies. This mix has become very popular, and people are charging a lot of money for these puppies, which are just basically mixed breeds, and so to me it's kind of a scam in some ways, but the poodle being hypoallergenic and the golden or the lab having the temperament and the trainability that they do, of course poodles I find are very trainable as well, but people seem to think this is a very good mix.
Usually,
but it doesn't always work.
When you're trying to develop a dog, it takes 5, 6, 7 generations before you can, you know, predict that you're going to get these characteristics as a result of a breeding. And Carol's dog kind of shows that, where just because you take one lab and one poodle and mix them the way somebody else did, you're not necessarily and probably not going to get the same dog. You don't know what the mix is going to be.
It could pick up the wrong side of the family's traits.
The wrong side of the family. No. So what you'd have to, if you went about it scientifically, you would get a bunch of poodles and a bunch of Labradors and start crossbreeding them over a period of several, 10, 12, 15 years.
So eventually you would get a Goldie Poo.
A stable mix.
A Goldie Poo.
With the qualities that...
Right.
Yeah.
What they found with these Labradoodles and the Goldie Poos is that the second generation, if they breed a Goldie Poo to a Goldie Poo, they get Goldens and Poodles. They don't get Goldie Poos. So the second generation, the F2 generation, does not turn out to be a Goldie poo. It separates back out again.
So you need a Goldie poo and a poodle, or a Goldie poo and a golden.
So they're experimenting now. The people who are breeding these dogs are experimenting, I think, with doing back crosses to see what's going to work. But right now,
Candy's
the only
on
thing
your side of the court, dear.
Yeah, I see her. The only
okay.
thing that you can predict is the first generation will be the mix. The second generation won't. So,
and would this breed eventually, could it eventually be recognized by the
Sure. They would AKC. Have to get a breed registry. They'd have to have what's called a stud book, so you could
they have to breed
know who the generations are.
True, for three generations.
Speaking of the AKC, they got a big mm-hmm. show coming up this month, don't they?
The Invitational down in Florida is the 18th or so of January.
They didn't invite
Mid-January,
us.
Mid-January, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Robin went to that a couple of years ago with Ross, mm-hmm. who, by the way, is Candy's grandfather. But we didn't get invited this year.
No. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of television shows, going back to that first caller, I would imagine that that will be on television. That's interesting to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be several years, I think, before. Obviously, dog shows aren't that popular yet, and the people covering them don't know how to – the camera people don't know what to look at. They usually look at the handler or the dog's head. And I'm sorry if I sound far away. I'm trying to hang on to Candy here.
Yeah. Well, do you think
whereas we dog
getting
people,
into trouble over there?
Well, you just, you know, you
when
just
puppies
can't
are
trust
sniffing,
them.
You just don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Just keep your eye on
this. This is the Afternoon Magazine. If you've got a question mm-hmm. about dogs, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Jim Keel and Robin Haggard are our guests this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they raise Malamutes. My name is Celeste Quinn. This program about dogs is a show we do once a month here on the Afternoon Magazine on the first Friday of the month. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. Well, I have a standard poodle, so I'm beginning to think I know why they have labradoodles. But anyway, she's great, but she's 11, and she's developing, I would say, or picking, more and more neuroses every month.
Hmm.
For example, I'm no longer allowed to go into the bathroom with the door closed.
Yeah.
And there's a closet door she doesn't allow me to open anymore.
Hmm. Doesn't in other words, she gets in front of it, and is she growling, or is she just getting in front of it and getting in your way?
She just cries.
Oh, well, some dogs, especially when they start to get older, they get, I don't want to say senility, but they do get some dementia type things going on. So she may have some of that. Happening. I just was reading something about so many dogs in this country are drugged for various problems. Prozac is almost as common to be given to dogs now as it is to people. And so some vets for dogs that have those sorts of developing problems will give them something like Prozac. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend that as much as I would recommend that you maybe make sure to spend some extra quality time with her. A lot of times when the dogs get older, they don't require as much exercise, so we don't do as much with them as we did when they were younger and they had to be taken for long walks or done.
She does require
a lot of retrieving.
She's still extremely active.
Uh-huh. Yeah, 11 is not that old for a poodle, actually. Even for a standard, their normal lifespan is somewhere around 13, 14 years old. But the other thing you might do is when she cries at the bathroom door, and a lot of dogs will do this, they want to be with you. They're afraid that you're going to leave them. And so give her a toy or a treat or something outside the door just before you go in and distract her a little bit from it. And reassure her when you come out, you know, that she's still your buddy.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I've found is I have to actually take her in with me. and she does not accept food as bribes. I mean, she's pretty smart. So, and the reassurance she just kind of rejects. I have tried some medication at one point, and I just thought it doped her up. So it wasn't really that effective. But I guess this is something I have to learn to live with. But she, I swear, it's like every month, it's like some other thing that she's afraid of, and then she drops the other thing.
She shifts her focus.
Yeah, at times I wonder if I'm being manipulated.
Well, and that was one of the things that I was going to suggest, is that you just not allow her to get away with doing things. You know, if she wants to cry outside the door of the bathroom or cry when you open a closet, you know, let her cry. If she was being aggressive, then I would be more concerned.
No, she's never been aggressive.
Yeah. Poodles, typically, if they're going to be aggressive, they would be that way younger, you know, as adolescents, and once they get to the age she is, then normally their personalities are pretty set as far as being sweet and not being aggressive about things, unless they are in pain. But it doesn't sound like that's a problem with her.
No.
It sounds more like a type of almost separation anxiety that's coming on as she gets older and she gets more afraid that you're going to leave, or that, you know, she doesn't have companionship. When she was younger, did you spend more time at home?
Well, I've always spent a lot of time with her. I'm an artist, so she comes to the studio with me and a lot. And I did spend quite a lot of time alone with her.
Yeah.
And at times a little less now, but she likes to do stuff, I think.
Yeah. Some dogs, especially if in their youth they got used to being with you a large percentage of the time, when that shifts, then they start to get, I think, a little more neurotic as far as that separation anxiety.
Yeah, separation anxiety sounds like probably what it is.
Yeah,
she doesn't like you to go anywhere where she can't see you.
Yeah.
It's really fun with guests. Don't go in the bathroom. Don't close the door.
Well, I said, we've got an 11-year-old Malamute, and he's starting to follow us around.
Yeah.
You know, we've got kind of an open area where we do most of our living, but if you walk into the kitchen area, he walks in there with you and lays down. If you walk back to the TV, he comes back and lays down. And it's only 15 feet, you know. So you think, well, you really don't have to move that much. But I think he's starting into that, where he doesn't want to be more than a few feet away from you. Whereas when he was younger, he liked the couch and he stayed on the couch, and you had to get him off. So I said, yeah, I think Tom's getting a little senile. And Robin, in complete denial, said, oh, no, he's too young. I don't know.
I'm in complete denial, too.
Yeah, it's...
no, that can't be it. Not my dog.
Yeah, well, and it's not, you know, they just want to be close. And it happens with a lot of older dogs. And
she doesn't even have to be physically close. She just wants eye contact.
Yeah, something like...
You know, I look in the backyard and she's looking in the window.
I'm keeping my eye on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's just part of the rich panoply of life. But it does, if it's, as Robin indicated, if it's not a problem, just let the dog do it. You know, if she whines because you're doing something, let her whine a little bit. In other words, don't try to accommodate her, because she'll say, aha, all I have to do is whine and I get what I want.
Yeah, and poodles are good at that.
Mm-hmm. Poodles are extremely intelligent dogs. Mm-hmm. I don't know how anybody lives with them.
Yeah, she's smarter than I am.
Yeah, and I know they're smarter than I am. So that's why I like the Malamutes, because they're not all that bright. Your dog will pick up on the things that are successful. But it doesn't sound like, as I said before, it doesn't sound like an extreme problem if you can live with it.
Yeah.
Going to the bathroom and having the dog come in with you might be a problem. But
that's pretty much the solution with showers.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of, I don't know, most of the time it's okay, but there are times that she actually trembles. Mm-hmm. And she's been like this since she went to a fireworks demonstration that I did not take her to.
Yeah.
So she's been a little neurotic ever since then.
That's
she was not
a good
at all
idea.
Before.
Yeah.
Fireworks are.
I always warn people, don't take little kids, you know, babies or dogs to fireworks.
Yeah. They don't understand the concept.
And many, you know, and people say, well, my dog wasn't afraid. Yeah, okay, fine. You know, there's a dog here and a dog there that doesn't get freaked out, mm-hmm. but quite a few do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I had a German Shepherd years ago that was never storm shy until she was about 6 or 7 years old. And all of a sudden she developed that storm shyness. And I think it was because she was out in a thunderstorm one time when it was very intense.
Yeah, those really smart dogs generalize, too, like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or
and in her old age, if it got cloudy even, she would start to tremble. So I think that does intensify with age.
Yeah. Yeah, last 4th of July, I just put her in the car and drove around.
Yeah. Well, and that's the time when a lot of people, you know, get a little medicine from the vet.
Yeah, she's got medicine for that. It doesn't really seem to help.
Yeah.
Just slows down and gets nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as I said, I don't like to drug dogs all that much. Obviously, in extreme cases, that's all you can do. But she doesn't sound like she has such a problem that you'd want to be doping her up all the time.
Not all the time, no. Maybe a little shot of whiskey.
Yeah, well...
I didn't say that.
That's for you. That's for you.
Oh, okay.
Not the dog. Well, good luck.
Hey, thanks very much.
Hey, thanks. Nice talking with you this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. If you've got a question about dogs. Robin Haggard and Jim Keel are with us this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they also raise Malamutes, and one of their pups is with us this afternoon. Her name is Candy. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Savoy, line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a boxer who's about 7 years old, and she's a good dog, and she travels with me, and last year I was coming back from Florida and had an accident with my trailer and my car. And she ended up on the floor and was shaken, but neither one of us were hurt. But since then, she will not sit on the seat of the car when I'm driving. Ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is there anything I can do? Mm-hmm. I mean, I figure that she's got a memory, especially after listening to what you were talking about. Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, in her case, yeah, it sounds like she was traumatized by this whole incident. And does she now ride on the floor?
Yep.
Yeah.
She lies on the floor right behind. I have a minivan.
Uh-huh.
And I just got a new one. I'm going to take one seat out so she's got more room.
Yeah.
I might think of putting a crate in there.
Oh, okay.
Well, our dogs travel in crates almost 100% of the time, because I was in an accident several years ago, hit black ice, and the car fell on its side, and I had two dogs with me, but they were in crates, and I was the only one who was hurt because I wasn't wearing my seatbelt.
Oh, my.
So I've learned and have... several friends who've been in bad accidents and the dogs were safe because they were in crates. Had a friend who rolled her van 3 times down a hill. She had 7 people in the van and about 10 dogs, and the dogs were perfectly safe because they were all in crates, whereas a couple of the people had fairly serious injuries because they went out of the van or they got run into by things. But the frame of the van actually was held up by the crates, and they said if the crates hadn't been stacked in there, as packed in there as high as they were, and held it, the whole top would have flattened and a lot more injuries. So crates are really the safe way to take your dog.
It's not necessarily that you have an accident where a dog can be hurt. It's like little kids. If you come to a sudden stop or anything like that, that's why we always call the crate the dog's seatbelt.
I bought a seatbelt and I tried to get it on her. That was a lost cause.
Yeah, unless they're a puppy when you start. Ouch.
Yeah, I was going to suggest a seatbelt as a possibility, but I've not seen that many dogs really adapt to those. I think, whereas most dogs like the den-like quality and the safety of the crate, and they don't. We've had dogs that get car sick, and when I put them in the crates, they don't get car sick either because they don't get tossed around as much.
Yeah.
So you might try a crate and see how she rides in that, especially if she's used to having one, like, in the house or something.
Yeah, she's not.
Okay.
I haven't had a crate for years.
Yeah. I would suggest, like, an airline crate because those have the solid walls and they're more like a den. To a dog.
Okay.
But if she likes to look out the window or did like to look out the window, then a wire crate might be best so that she could still look out the window.
Well, this particular van I just bought has a tumble under back seat, so I can. We did put her in the back, and she just laid down and went to sleep back there.
Yeah.
Didn't have any problems.
Right. And that may be. That's good that she is able to relax in it, but in terms of her safety.
No, that's not very good.
The crate might be best.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about animal cruelty. It's not necessarily having a dog question, but I'm wondering in Champaign-Urbana, where can I call to report what I think is maybe abuse or mistreatment?
Two places. You can call the local police. You can also call the Humane Society. I'm the lawyer. You know, I think the animal control is part of the police department.
Okay.
So, but they may have their own phone number. You can look them up in the phone book. Or you can call the Humane Society, who animal control will eventually call anyway.
Okay. And do they go out and do, like, individual?
They have a licensed one or two, I think.
They at least have one humane investigator who does check out reports of abuse and gives owners warnings or gives them suggestions and works with that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay. Next, we talk with a listener in Ivesdale. Line three. Hi.
I just got a question for you. Can you condition dogs to not be afraid of storms and even... More importantly, how about gunshots and so forth? Like police dogs, I assume, are conditioned to ignore that type of noise.
There's a go ahead, Robin. Robin was about to speak.
Well, I was just going to say there is a genetic condition called gun shyness in certain breeds, probably in all breeds, but in the retrieving breeds and pointing breeds where they have
sporting
to. Sporting dogs, where they have to shoot over their heads. There is a genetic condition of gun shyness. When they train police dogs, one of the things that they test them for is that trait. So they don't even bother if the dog shows gun shyness as a puppy.
I see.
I saw on the internet there are CDs you can buy that that are classic conditioning things where... you know, they get louder and louder. They have gunshots and thunderstorm noises, which are essentially the same thing as far as the dog's concerned.
Mm-hmm. And they are effective then?
The last time we had Robin talked about the girl that was afraid of storms, and geez, that was 20 years ago. So we haven't had that problem. And in the
years ago.
Yeah.
40 years ago.
More than that. 30 years. But in any event, we haven't had the problem. We haven't had to use it. So I don't know if it's effective or not.
I see.
But I think I saw them in one of the dog catalogs. And probably you can find them online, too.
Yeah.
But that would be the way to do it. If the dog doesn't have the genetic gun shyness gene that it's an involuntary reaction to loud noises.
Right. Yeah.
You cannot condition them out of it. But if they don't have that, these are classical conditioning things. You play them louder and louder and that kind of thing.
Right.
And I would think they'd be effective because that's how we do it. But
years ago, I had somebody on the program who was a dog trainer, long before I
met us.
Met you folks, and that's what he recommended was doing this.
Consistently
and you start you start with the volume very low.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you work up very gradually, gradually. And
with modern technology, the CDs have very good. One of the problems with playing music or something or playing thunderstorms is it doesn't have the low notes that the dog can hear and we can't.
Right.
But with CDs and better equipment, they can play those very low notes and get the dog conditioned to it.
In some dogs, it's an atmospheric, the low pressure
system. Yeah, there's more going on. Mm-hmm.
It's not just noise.
Yeah. We've had dogs that were unsocialized to like dog shows and things like that. And so those dogs can be conditioned to accept the noises and excitement and all of the things that go on at a dog show at an older age. If they don't have this genetic problem. What we've done with our puppies, we test them when they're babies to see if they're noise shy.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And then you can work with them from puppyhood on, conditioning them to new noises and making sure that they're exposed to things. But once they develop this fear, especially storms, drugs, and I've used the herbal medications, too, the Bach flower remedies. We had a dog who didn't like the crackly noises of things like loudspeakers, and I used a combination of the Bach flower remedies with her at dog shows, and that really helped with her.
Sure. Uh-huh. Well, we've had labs for several years, and actually my son has had two labs, indoor and outdoor dogs. And, of course, they are put outside during the daytime because both husband and wife work. But those dogs get so paranoid with storms that they have actually jumped through windows and mm-hmm. torn entrance doors apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, just
yep.
literally destroyed them.
That's
what our dog did.
The German Shepherd that I had, yeah. Mm-hmm. We lost more windows and doors to that dog.
Right. Okay.
And she locked herself in the closet one time. That was the amazing part.
Wow.
She got in a closet in the house and shut the door on herself, and we came home and we couldn't find her anywhere.
I'm in here under the covers.
Oh, the closet was torn apart.
Oh. So. Well, there we have to leave it. Good to see the two of you again. And Candy, nice to meet you. There you go. All right. We'll talk about dogs again on the first Friday of February. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Bye, Candy. Jim Keel and Robin Haggard have been our guests this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine.